Hi, this is Bob Scully, and welcome to another edition of The World Show, Free Markets, the GDI series. This week, a dynamic young entrepreneur who divides her time between San Francisco and Senegal. That's quite the commute, look it up on the map. And she's at the heart of one of the burning questions in entrepreneurship today, Africa. How will it develop? Who will develop it? When will it happen? And one thing's for sure, the potential is enormous, and our guest, Magat Wade, will be part of the action. Here she is. Magat Wade, you're a dynamic young American entrepreneur from San Francisco. You have the passport to prove it, but also one of the most dynamic young entrepreneurs in Africa. And you have a passport from there too. And you have managed to build on both sides of the globe. And we want to talk about that and your philosophy of entrepreneurship and your company, Skinny Skin, and the other things you've done. But to give people a taste of how you think and how you write, and just a couple of sentences from an interview you gave.
Sure.
The negative perception that most Americans have about Africa, either they believe that it is a disaster, and thus I can't possibly build a business based on producing goods in Africa, or they believe that it is a disaster and want me to build a pity-based brand where Americans buy the products because they feel sorry for Africans, something, of course, that you reject. And so I'm wondering how the dream came. You started with a national drink in Senegal called Bissap from the hibiscus plant. You were very perturbed because it was being replaced by Coke and Fanta, as you say. That was your start. Let's look at your entrepreneurial story.
Yes, so I would even go a little bit further. So how it all started is I grew up in France. I was born in Senegal, west coast of Africa. Then my family moved to Germany and then to France. France is where I got educated, and I have a passport from there as well. But so what happened after business school in France, I decided that France was going to be too small for my ambitions. I may or may not have to tell you how constrained everything is, especially in the labor
bureaucracy.
Yes, and so I decided at that point to move to the United States because I felt out of all the places that I looked into, that's the one place that kept coming back in terms of, you know, this one place where there is a possibility to build a dream. The American dream was very real in my mind, although I've never set a foot in America before.
Oh, no.
So, but you know, that's what Hollywood does. It makes people like us around the rest of the world dream.
Yeah, it works.
It works. It does work. And so when came the time to go anywhere I could please to go in the world, I picked America because this was a place where I was told that if you work hard, you will be able to reap the benefits of your work. So I certainly do not want to earn, you know, I don't want to earn more than what I work for, but I certainly don't want to earn less than I work for. So I moved to the United States and spent close to a year in Columbus, Indiana. Most people don't know that. They're like, what, you in Columbus, Indiana? Yes. And after a year there, I moved, I came to San Francisco, and like they said, I left my heart in San Francisco. So I went back to follow that passion. And I landed in the middle of Silicon Valley in the late 1990s, 1998 it was. So in the heydays of a dot-com. And you know, within a few months later, the dot-com
collapsed.
Exactly. So it was fascinating to watch that, you know, to see this cycle of everything going down and a few years later everything going back up. And there my job was as a headhunter in finance. So I got to work with companies like Google, like Netflix, before it became household name brands, right? But most importantly, I think what I noticed and what I was blessed to experience during that time was this magic of entrepreneurship. This amazing ability to create something literally out of nothing.
Yeah.
People creating businesses from the back of a napkin. That was amazing, right? So for most people, it sounds like one of those cliches of, you know, Silicon Valley and entrepreneurs, but I've seen it. That's what I was seeing. So that had a real impact on me. Because if you trace it back, then, so there I was in Silicon Valley doing very well for myself. But eventually, at some point, I could no longer reconcile this life of abundance that I was afforded. Yes, I worked really hard for it, but at the same time, I could no longer reconcile this life of abundance that I had with the life of scarcity that I left back home in Senegal. And it just really started to torture me. It started to torture me. And because I'm I'm someone who doesn't let go when something doesn't make sense to me, and I don't. If once I perceive something to not be right, once I perceive something to not be just, it doesn't let me go. I don't let it go. So I have to find out why. So eventually, one thing leading to another, I'm starting to put two and two together. And I had made a deal. It's funny to say I made a deal with God. But I said, listen, from now on, I'm a little, something happened to me. I was driving down Big Sur, and I lost it. And that's when, I lost it. And what happened eventually later, that's how I found out. What happened to me back then was just this inability to reconcile those two worlds, as I told you.
Yeah.
And that's when I made the deal with God to be, you know what, from now on, I vow that everything that I will do on this earth will have to do with how do we get Africa out of poverty and into prosperity.
So the road to Damascus for you was the road to Big Sur.
That's right. That's right. And I do think that the universe works in very mysterious ways, and you don't have to be a believer. It has nothing necessarily to do with, but I just do think that one once is ready to take action about something, I do think things start to come together. Mm-hmm. And so a few months later, it happened. I took my French husband to Senegal to discover the place I was born and the place I came from. And he's like, where is this Bissap beverage that you've had, that you've been telling me about? And I want to see other ways of making it. And would you believe that whether it was family members or friends, or you go to a restaurant and you ask for a Bissap back then, and people are like, huh?
Yeah. It was the national drink previously.
Yes. Bissap is the juice of Teranga. Teranga means hospitality. That is what us, the people of Senegal, are known for.
And it's so from the hibiscus plant.
It's from the hibiscus
plant.
It's
red. It's like
yes,
crimson,
it's a red
tide.
Drink. It's a beautiful red scarlet drink. So, and really full of really great antioxidants, more vitamin C than orange juice itself, and really very potent. The next one to compare it to maybe is cranberry in terms of virtues.
That's why I said Crimson Tide. So
exactly.
With some champagne and some Bissap.
People drink it like that.
A nice cocktail.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what happened there is what I'm discovering is that basically my people, if it is indigenous to us, it can't be good enough. Hmm. We won't sit here and have a psychology class or history class because all of that, there is a lot of all of that. As to why is it that back then we look at where we come from and everything that's indigenous to us as not good enough. We still have a lot of that going on. I perceived this complex of inferiority, around stuff like that.
So if you had not intervened, the big international soft drinks would have wiped out Bissap.
We were on the way. It was happening. The Bissap industry was collapsing. Mm. It was collapsing. So we put some women back to work. We put close to 4,000 women back to work. And just the other day, actually, I was corrected. Someone said, my God, you keep saying 4,000 women. It's 7,000 women.
That's
insane.
And how did you get the capital? How did you get the ball rolling?
So at that point, when I basically, when I found out that my people did not have enough confidence in our indigenous background, it really got me ill to my stomach. I literally was ill for 3 days, the body not functioning any longer. So at that point, my husband said, my God, this anger of yours, it's energy. But you got to turn it around into positive energy when it becomes inspiration. And that started to really click in my head. If you put that together with this notion and this mantra of criticize by creating, by which I've been raised my whole life, then you start to, I put two and two together and I was, gee, I'm going to start a brand, beverage company, a brand in which I'm going to embed the very best of my culture. And then I'm going to take that back out to the rest of the world. I'm going to start it in the United States. I'm going to do reverse colonialism on my own people. Because by the time we bring it back to Senegal, it's going to be this drink that all of them are like, oh my God, we're hearing that all of these people in America, that's what they drink now. So it must be good. Mm-hmm. You see this validation in a way. I've always accepted that maybe my generation would have to take that route to bring some of our indigenous assets back to the forefront. But as the new generation would be born and grow up with brands like that, with this new reality, then maybe they will not need to go through that path of having things validated by the West for them to really take into understand and mm-hmm. decide for themselves what's good and what's not.
And as a true serial entrepreneur, you stayed in this discovery of yours, your roots, and mm-hmm. And sort of twinned with the American market. But
yes.
then you did it for skin.
Yes.
After having done it for beverages, mm-hmm. And you started Tiosan.
We started Tiosan,
and I know that you asked Senegalese ingredients.
A Senegalese ingredients, and I know that you asked earlier, how did you do Adina? So that one, the beverage company, we did it the way I knew to do it. I lived in Silicon Valley. I've watched people start an mm-hmm. Business. It starts with an idea, and then you go and you try to get your what we call the three Fs. Friends, family, and fools. Those are the first one to invest in your company. And then later, later more.
Couldn't be any clearer.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got it started. At least the first $2 million, that's how we got it. And then after that, we just kept on going more institutional route.
You went to skin.
Yes.
I'm curious. You didn't want to stay in beverages and do more of that?
No, I didn't want to stay in beverages because the point that I was trying to make, you see, I'm a weird entrepreneur because I do things out of passion, obviously, but my whole point is making a point.
Mm-hmm.
So I have always said that what I did with beverages, I could do with pretty much anything that you need in your life. The couch you're sitting on right now.
Yes.
What if I told you, if you came to my house in San Francisco, you would see a very unique seating where basically it's this big, the big cooking stoves that we use in Africa? They're mm-hmm. huge because you're cooking for hundreds of people at the same time, especially during the baptisms, funerals, and all of that. So we have these huge cooking stoves that we use in pots and pans. So one of them, we carved out, and it's metal, carved out on the side enough for you to be able to sit in, and then put in some cushions and pillows inside.
Wow.
Right? I've never seen a seat like that anywhere. And I travel around the world and I go to very hip and groovy places. I have yet to see a seat like that somewhere.
So you're sitting on the oven.
Right. I'm sitting on the oven. And so we could do this with anything. The clothes you're wearing, the tie you're wearing could be done with different fabrics. Mm-hmm. We could bring in some
sure.
different, cuts. I'm looking at it and I'm kind of seeing all of that. Even when people talk about Zumba, what about taking some of the West African dances where they're moving? It's really high calorie, spending that you when you're doing
yeah.
those dances. So how about you work with a choreographer and you kind of section out each move and then maybe you reorganize them in a different way so it's more palatable for the Western customer because maybe there are some moves that are harder for them to make. Who knows? And voila, all of a sudden you have an African type, fitness routine that was created out of something like that. You take the massages that we do for our babies from birth. Then you move into obviously all the skincare products that we use, the different ingredients that we use and how we've been using them and for what and for how long. In everything, every aspect of your life, I could go after it and Africanize it for you, whatever that means.
And what's incredible is the way the marketers designate your market niche is the creative cultural community, the gang that shops at Whole Foods and so on.
Yes.
But just listening to you, you are the creative cultural community. You're bubbling with ideas. And now it's Skinny Skin, which
yes.
is a lip balm.
A lip balm. Yes. So Skinny Skin, so my first two companies, that's why Forbes calls me the African that sells, the entrepreneur who sells African recipes to the Western world mm-hmm. in a way. So the first two companies always, we're tapping into my African background to bring new products to the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very much what we were showcasing was the African know-how and the African, secrets.
Yeah.
With Skinny Skin, I tried to push it to the next level. Because you see, I consider myself, by now, we have countless people who are building now African brands. When I started on that journey, my friends were laughing at me. They were like, no one is ever going to buy African products, no matter how high-end you make them, because they just don't believe we can be that capable.
Mm-hmm.
I had friends who went to Harvard who did not believe that my journey was a valid journey, because they never thought that the West would buy into it, ever. So, and now, That same friend, by the way,
the wind has shifted.
Started a company also. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I think there we've made the point. We've proven that it is possible. When Adina raised money, we were the first African company started and run by an African who raised that much money. We raised close to $32 million in the on the journey, the entire journey of Adina. They didn't think it was possible. We did it. So now we have countless African brands being built about everything. And wow. I couldn't be happier. Now, I'm taking it to the next level of challenge. It's great to be bought because we're supposedly African. That's our difference. And that's a great difference because there's validity there. There's things that we do that are, you know, that the world should discover, you know, and sure. could benefit from. But now I want to push it to the next level, which is when you're buying a product sometimes, you don't really care the origins of it. You're buying it because you want the absolute best product.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because it does something that has nothing to do with its origins. So in my situation now, we're trying to take it away from you're buying it simply because it's an African this or an African that. It's now, can we, when you throw everybody else in, can we be the best? And so Skin is Skin, the lip balm, it's taking a different route on my other companies. Still manufactured in Africa, using African ingredients, because for me by now, it shouldn't be any claim to fame. Mm-hmm. I like to think that we have made that clear.
But you're not moving away from Senegal.
No, absolutely not. Mm. But what I'm doing now is a product made in Africa that's catering to a bigger problem in the world. In this situation, Skin is Skin, we call it the little lip balm on a mission to end discrimination.
Hmm.
It started in 2016, in my mind, conceptually speaking, when we had in the United States the free videos of the black people being killed by the police and offered to the rest of the world to watch die in very inhumane conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sitting here and I'm not interested in talking about who was right, who was wrong. What I saw was people dying in inhumane conditions, and that's just a big no-no. I don't care what happened prior to that.
Yeah.
So, and at the same time, watching a really, really divided country. I happen to live in a household where my husband is white and I'm black.
Mm-hmm.
I want to live in a harmonious world. I want to live in a world where I am a knowledge, where he's a knowledge, and somebody else who's not like us is a knowledge. I want to live in a world where everybody is a knowledge for the fact that we all, at the end of the day, are the same.
Yes.
But we're the same also in the fact that each of us is unique. So
how does Skinny Skin tie in with that?
The way Skinny Skin ties it with is when I found out once again that this discrimination issue was really bothering me, and everything got triggered by these videos that I've seen,
mm-hmm.
I promised to myself that I'm going to work on discrimination. I didn't know when or how yet. But step number one, as with everything that bothers me, go back and look at why. What's going on and why and how did we get there? I wanted to understand discrimination beyond the headlines
mm-hmm.
and beyond all the outrage and beyond all the noise.
Yes.
So I started spending time in the world of brain scientists, in the world of psychologists, in the world of behavioral scientists, in the world of VR even, virtual reality people, because empathy and the role of empathy in all of this. And what I understood very quickly then from there is this simple fact that we all have biases. If you've got a brain, you've got biases. It's baked in. Mm-hmm. I liked the fact that right there, it seemed that it's something we all share. So it was not a situation where, oh my God, white people bad or such people bad. No, it was like, you've got a brain, it comes with a territory. Because as it turns out, right around age 3, something starts to happen. Two things. One is you're this little being and your only chance of survival in the world is to make sense of a world.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way for you to make sense of a world is usually through associations.
Okay.
Some people call it intelligence building. And so you're trying to make associations to the point that you're such a small human being, there's nothing subtle, to a point you see women equals food. Because women has been the one feeding you. Women
yes.
equals food. It's that type of association and how, you know, just simple they can be. And at the same time, the brain being the smallest organ of a body, yet sucks up the most energy, the brain is designed for one thing and one thing only. And it is efficiency. And the way the brain does efficiency is primarily through automation. So imagine those two things happening now. You're making these associations And the brain is making them as quickly as possible, to the point that now you're not even thinking about it. Decades later, you're sitting there, if you're in my situation, you know, looking, we've seen this, looking for a new eye doctor, get all of these names, you start researching each one of them to do your homework, look at the reviews, everything, and I came across the name of Dr. Chavez, and I heard this voice in the back of my head saying, no way. Because somewhere along the way, I must have picked up this information from my surrounding that a person with a Latino-sounding name must not be a good doctor.
Hmm.
Shocking.
That's a bias.
For someone like me, yes. So the biases are these things that are in the back of your head, have absolutely nothing to do with what you truly believe. But if you do not check them,
yes,
you will act on them. See, that's what happens. Your behavior follows your biases, not necessarily your conscious thinking. So that's why we...
Yes.
So what we learn...
I'm wondering if the lip balm has anti-bias ingredient in it.
You will see. So you see what happens there. If your mind is not switched on, it is automatically on autopilot. So we now know, and I like how the scientists look at it, the fact that implicit biases are a habit. And as with any habit, the best way for you to have a chance to address them is you have to be reminded constantly to keep an eye on them, to be on. You got to switch it on. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the habit, you keep just running them. So first, you have to have a reminder. And second, you have to also, when this pops up, we have to be in a culture where it's okay for us to say, hey, my name is Magad. My name is Robert, my name is Michelle, and you know what? I've got biases.
Mm-hmm.
And for the rest of the world not to be laughing at you or ostracizing you, calling you racist, sexist, or whatever it is that the bias seems to be about.
Yeah.
It needs to be okay for you to say that, and so that way you can get to the next level, which is, oh, and I want to work on them. So you want to work on them with serenity.
But are you going to use the profits from Skinny Skin?
The way this happens with a product, so... Basically, once I understood all of that, I'm like, okay, I got to build a brand because I believe in the power of brands to change culture. Brands are powerful culture influencers.
Yes,
so it's got to be a brand. And the brand has to make it, to build a new culture in which it is okay to be able to address our biases openly without being called names. And the product has to be something that's going to be supporting the practice of undoing your implicit bias.
It's a little bit like Luciano Benetton with the
Some people
the, with the
like
colors.
To say that, yeah, but I think we're really focused on really messing. This brand is totally science-backed, so we're really working on helping rewire your brain. So,
and can I just imagine it's a little tube like most lip balm?
Yes, it's a little tube like most lip balm. Think about the lip balm as your own personal guru on your journey to undoing your
bias
habit of, yes, your implicit bias habit. So the way it works is, so the reason why it's a lip balm, the lip balm came just to serve a mission. We had to think, it had to be a small product. Small, why? Because you have to be able to carry it everywhere. It needed to be something that's mobile that you can use and something that you use multiple times a day. Mm-hmm. Something that's unisex, doesn't matter which sex you are, you can use. Doesn't matter which age you are, you can use. So that's when we're like, and it had to do with skin, by the way, because we needed to manufacture it back home, and I didn't want to recreate a whole new supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we call it Skinny Skin, just to be very open to your face what this is all about. So that's when we're like, lip balm. That's when lip balm came. And as we designed these lip balms with our own, with ingredients from Africa, I never forgot something that the brain scientist told me, and they said, the brain can rewire itself. That's the plasticity of a brain. And the key ingredients that it need, the neurons need to make new pathways among themselves, is empathy, love, curiosity. So that's why you have coconut and love, mint and curiosity, anise and empathy, almond and soul. What you have in these lip balms, we have embedded the active ingredients.
Well, it sounds good. And it sounds good enough to eat, actually.
It's very good, and it smells really good, and it's all very clean chemistry. It's just amazing. So this lip balm, really, the best way to think about it is that it's a constant reminder to help you switch your mind on, so that it's not on autopilot. And it's amazing and fascinating what you start to see once that mind of yours is no longer on auto. You watch a movie, you see biases there. You are in line looking even at a magazine, you see the biases there. You see it everywhere. You're starting to see them everywhere, and you're starting also to change your own behavior. And that's really all it is. Well, it is about inward activism. Look inward, change, be a better person. Everyone else does the same thing, and then we have a new, whole new world. It's not a place where we're shouting at each other, where we're complaining about each other, where we're being divided with each other. No. No.
Well, when we started the interview, I was in a hurry to have a drink of Bissap as soon as I can, wherever I can find it. Now I'm in a hurry to try the lip balm.
We will get you some lip balms.
Thank you very much.
And they do wonders for the lips.
Well, thank you, Magat, and long life and good luck.
Thank you so much.